So sometimes here on the show, we book a guest ahead of time, and we don't necessarily know exactly what the news will be on the day that they come or how we're going to be thinking about the news in that moment. And today is one of those days, and we're so grateful that we had a chance to schedule a guest that feels so appropriate to the national and local moment that we're in. Isaac Yablo is stepping into a new role for the City of Boston, Senior Advisor for Community Safety. And the city wants a strong public health lens going forward in that role. Isaac is here with us in Studio 2. Isaac, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to start with a warning for listeners. We will be talking about trauma, violence, safety for the next several minutes. So listeners, be aware of that. Isaac, we are in such a... Okay, so before the show started, right above you, you can't see them because they're behind you on the screen. Mm-hmm. On the wall, I have two televisions up, CNN and Fox News, which I always have in the background on closed caption. Mm-hmm. Just before the show starts, I peek up at the screen, and they are showing video mm-hmm. of the killing in Memphis. You can see that I am shaken and taken aback by it. I had not watched Tyre Nichols's murder. Death, accused, the five police officers are accused of murder. And there it is on the screen. Mm-hmm. We are in a moment where everyone is confronted with the pornographic of violence and trauma. And our young black men who disproportionately know themselves to be potential victims are being confronted with that all the time. Mm-hmm. So as you come into this community safety advisory role, and there's a public health dimension to it, how do you get your head around and think about this moment that we're in?
Yeah, so I am honored to be in the role. I did enter the role at a relatively tough time, I would say. The goal of taking a public health approach is really to look at root causes of this violence, community violence. What happened down in Memphis is more than a tragedy. It shouldn't have happened. I am a black man, and so I walk in my black skin every day, and I know what it feels like to be uncomfortable, not in our skin, but just in where we're at as a society in terms of how we're dealing with black men, just to be blunt. Again, what happened in Memphis is a tragedy, and it's something that I struggle with because, you know, as black people and people of color, we've been dealing with traumas like this for years, and so part of me feels like this is regular programming, but then the other part of me feels like each time there's another person that loses their life that looks like me, it rips another part of my heart out. So the approach that I'm taking to this work is just with people on my back, my ancestors on my back, and the people that have lost their lives on my back, just trying to make them proud in the work that we're going to do moving forward.
I really appreciate that answer, and I'm mindful of your relative youth at under 30. This is a big responsibility, mm-hmm. Just in terms of what you are carrying. Do you have a support network around you as you think about advising a big city, the city of Boston, about community safety that will carry you and support you and advise you and keep you whole while you're trying to do this every day?
Yeah, I definitely have a very good support system. I have a wonderful wife that keeps me sane, but more importantly, I have people that I work with every single day as a part of this network that I've built out and are working to continue to build out. It's full of individuals that I can talk to about the work, but I can also confide in. So I definitely have people that are on my side. We have the same goal in mind, which is to create a safer Boston for all the residents.
And what does, so let's bring the heart, the head, and the soul together now, because one of the things that both we've known you for in, you know, in the past here on Radio Boston and that you're very public about is your commitment to data. Mm-hmm. And that's the head, right? And the head, heart, and soul, when they all come together, what does safety, community safety, look like? How do you prioritize it? What do you measure it? How do you measure it? How do you know when people are safe?
Yeah, I think that there's obviously you have to look at quantitative metrics and the qualitative metrics. I think historically what cities do is they look at a reduction of, you know, violent acts or an increase of, you know, graduation, right? So, but I think there's qualitative nuance. I believe that fear of crime is a very real metric. And speaking where we're at right now, we had a young person lose their life Recently, we have what's going on in Memphis and other places in the United States. So fear of crime is a legitimate thing. So as we're working and looking for measurables, looking at quantitative statistics, because the quantitative statistics, the trends, will help us to allocate resources in the places that are that need it most. But then the qualitative metrics will help us to understand, based on the resources that we're providing, are they working? Yes or no? Right. So it's very nuanced, but it's a task that I think that we as a city are prepared to take on.
So I want to just round out a reference that you made. On Sunday, it was reported that there was a shooting in Mattapan. 11:30 a.m. on Sunday, the police reported that they believed it was a targeted shooting of an individual and that the shooting was fatal. And we now have reporting from yesterday that the victim was a 13-year-old boy from Norwood. And we've had a number of other conversations here on Radio Boston over the last several months about kids in schools in Boston. And one framing about kids are being violent in schools, they're being violent in schoolyards. We're seeing increased violence in the Boston public schools. And another framing that is we are seeing increased fear for kids in the Boston public schools. We are seeing kids take more extreme steps to feel that they can protect themselves because they don't feel protected. That is a key piece of what this advisory job focuses on. And you have done work with youth workers, or what the city calls street workers, for quite a bit of time already in the past.
Yeah.
So as you lay out a landscape of what you're going to measure, what you're going to think about, what levers you think you want to push on there, how are you thinking about that piece?
It's extremely nuanced. I think, again, to the point about being data-driven, I just want to look at the data. Right now, things are very polarized within the Boston Public School system. It's not a reflection of the system in general. I think that these incidents that have happened recently are terrible and tragic. Same thing with this incident that happened on Sunday. I had just left church, and I went immediately from church to the scene. And it's a scene that was, compared to other scenes, fairly calm, but still you could feel the aura that things were just not right, for lack of a better word. So I think as I, moving forward, it's just we have to be cognizant of what these young people are actually going through. The fight is not necessarily against the Boston Public School System, the police department, certain politicians. The fight is against the culture that is taking grip of our young people. And the culture is a culture that is not forgiving. It's a culture that is not respectful of systems, and it's a culture that does not value life the way that we would want our young people to value their lives. So as I look into this role in the future, this role, I look at what I'm, the task that I'm up against is fighting a culture that does not value the lives of our children.
So I want to leave the full weight of the focus on culture and what you said firmly here in the middle of the table. And I want to pick up another piece. You are the child of professors. You are pursuing your PhD at MIT. You believe in the power of data. So I want to take this data piece, and I want to talk about it as a superpower, and ask you how one can use data as a power or a superpower to bring into the mix that we've just left on the table with everything else we're talking about. What is the potential and the possibility there? And why do you believe in it as a core tool so deeply? Educate us about that.
I think that data, depending on how ethically it's gathered, right, can be an amazing reflection of people, systems, processes. And for me, as a person that is primarily qualitative, I am very much a people person. I like to use data, and I think, again, going back to metrics of data and metrics of success that we're going to be looking at, again, quantitatively, you have to look at that, because that's how large entities like government secure funding, right? Because, you know, we need to have some sort of quantitative
reduction measure. In violent crimes, fewer shootings, fewer thefts and robberies, right. Sexual assault is down, right. Fewer guns, those kinds of things.
Right, and then an increase of graduation, right? Like increase, you know,
the
things
positives
like that.
As well.
Exactly.
Enfranchisement, employment, economic well-being.
Right.
Okay.
Right, so all of those things, but then, like, again, going back to the quantitatives, like if we have all of these things, like if I've created 1,000 new jobs and the community that needs it most is not feeling the creation of those new jobs, did we really do what we were setting out to do? And so I just leave it at that.
We're speaking with Isaac Yablo, who's the new senior advisor for community safety for the city of Boston, and noting that that role used to be called senior advisor for public safety. The city has changed it to a broader focus of community safety, wanting to really underscore the public health lens when we talk about safety. So who is and isn't safe?
On a day-to-day reality, there's people that probably feel that they aren't safe. Then there's the individuals that have been adversely impacted by systems of racism that have festered and birthed issues surrounding safety. I would say that it's a tough question.
I'm mindful, and I want to apologize to you because I'm mindful. I sounded glib or almost gotcha, and that's actually not what I'm looking to do with that question. I'm looking to understand how you think about that framing and where our vulnerabilities are in the city of Boston around safety.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's really no way to sugarcoat the answer that there have been communities in the city of Boston that have been adversely impacted by community violence since our city was founded, right? Mm-hmm. And for individuals residing in certain communities within the city, going to the metrics, I can tell them about a reduction in violence, but a lot of the time it's not felt on a day-to-day basis. For the individuals that are residing in communities that have been adversely impacted by racism, obviously there are levels and there's issues surrounding safety that are not felt in other communities.
So, for example, historically Roxbury or a Dorchester or a Mattapan that has been systematically disenfranchised from resources, job opportunities, quality schools versus the Back Bay, where we know, for example, that there's a significant life expectancy difference there versus the neighborhoods that we're talking about.
Right. And I want to go back to, like, you know, the compound trauma that some of these communities are dealing with. So if I've talked to people that, you know, if there's a shooting on their street, they're not going to necessarily feel more unsafe. To them, it's, again, regular programming. This mm-hmm. is what we've been dealing with since I was born. So am I going to feel more unsafe when this just continues to happen? Yes and no. Again, Boston is a safe city compared to other major cities. We have some of the lowest numbers. But as I've said before, if you're talking to a person that lives on a street where there's acts of violence that are committed every year, it's going to be a hard time selling to them that we are a safe city when it's the same communities that have been impacted by this violence.
So that implies community safety comes with serious structural change.
Yes, and I would also add, though, that, you know, these communities that have been dealing with this violence are extremely resilient and have been, and the levels of collective efficacy within the community are extremely high. Oftentimes, it's a byproduct of this violence that they've been dealing with.
Can you explain for our listeners this term, collective efficacy?
Yeah, I would just feel it. In short, it's a feeling of social cohesion. I would say that there's a feeling of it's. You know, we have all heard the saying, it takes a village to raise a child. So that feeling of I'm not just living as an individual within society, but I have relationships, I have individual relationships, I have a community, and then I have a society that I'm actually caring for. And so collective efficacy would mean that, you know, if we're all living on the same block, we can all care about, you know, the quality of life on our street, right? And oftentimes in communities, where you're dealing with disenfranchisement, collective efficacy is one of the first things that it can either go away very quickly, but it can also be built very quickly, because sometimes you feel like, well, if resources are limited, I got to worry about myself. It's kind of like what they tell you on an airplane, secure your mask before you secure others. But then at the same time, people that are going through some of the hardest times oftentimes will come together, because they know that there's, when there's camaraderie and there's a team, if you will, it might make the situation a little bit easier.
So in our last minute together, life is always full of both joy and pain, right? Happiness and challenge, hard truths and happy truths. As you approach this work, where do you think the joy will be?
The joy for me is already started. It's working together with community to make sure that community is safe. The Boston Police Department is like the last resort for me. I want to do everything that I can to work with the community to build, you know, different tools related to informal social control, and just make them feel like that the community is really owning the work that's being done, and that it's not being done outside of what they want. I don't want it to feel like siloed work. I want the work to be collective. So,
Isaac Yablo is Boston Mayor Michelle Wu's new senior advisor on community safety. I appreciate you coming to Studio 2, and I appreciate you sitting down and having a really thoughtful conversation with us. Thank you, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Anytime.